Insights, interviews, and best practices by clinicians for clinicians. Welcome to GE Healthcare's Clinical View Podcast.
Hello, I am Dr. Nicola Cosentino, and welcome to this podcast series on ECG monitoring sponsored by GE Healthcare. Today's topic will be on admission pathways of acute coronary syndrome ACS patients. The term acute coronary syndrome ACS is applied to patients in whom there is confirmation of acute myocardial ischemia or infarction and usually occurs when an atherosclerotic plaque disrupts, resulting in platelet and coagulation factor activation and thrombus formation. Now, the three traditional types of ACS are non-ST elevation myocardial infarction, not STEMI, ST elevation myocardial infarction, STEMI, and a stable angina. From a practical point of view and with relevant therapeutic implications, ACS are subdivided into ST elevation ACS and non-ST elevation ACS. Now, all ACS which exhibit persistent ST segment elevation lasting more than 20 minutes, especially for more than 30 minutes on ECG, are classified as ST elevation ACS, and it is usually caused by a complete coronary artery occlusion, and virtually all patients will develop MI, which is classified as STEMI. On the other hand, non-ST elevation ACS includes all ACS without significant and persistent ST segment elevation and is usually caused by partial occlusion of the artery and encompasses non-STEMI and a stable angina. Now, the difference between the last two is that in non-STEMI, differently from a stable angina, troponin value is increased. And non-ST elevation ACS typically presents with ST segment depression and or T-wave abnormalities inversion or may have non-diagnostic alterations or even normal ECG. So, moving to the admission pathways of acute coronary syndrome, any patient presenting to the emergency department with chest pain or chest pain equivalent, dyspnea, jaw or neck discomfort, epigastric discomfort, back interscapular discomfort, left and or right shoulder, elbow or arm discomfort. Well, any patient should have, in this case, an ECG performed within 10 minutes. Moreover, non-acute coronary syndrome chest pain should be urgently excluded, such as aortic dissection, pericarditis and pericardial effusion, pulmonary embolism, tension pneumothorax, acute perforation of peptic ulcer, or esophageal tear or rupture. Other causes of chest pain to remember are aortic stenosis and hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. And if any of these emergency conditions is suspected, immediate echocardiogram or CT scan should be requested. Going back to the patient coming with chest pain. So patients with chest pain or chest pain equivalent lasting longer than 20-30 minutes are prioritized according to their ECG findings. And STEMI patients are those with one of the following ECG criteria for acute MI. So which are these criteria? First, more or equal or more than 1 mm ST segment elevation in two contiguous leads, especially if there is a concomitant reciprocal ST segment depression. Second, new left bundle branch block. Or third, acute posterior wall MI, which is usually seen as ST segment depression in leads V1 to V3 and ST segment elevation in posterior leads V7 to V9. Of note, remember that in posterior leads, the cutoff for the clinical significance for ST segment elevation is only 0.5 mm. So if a patient comes in with chest pain or chest pain equivalent lasting longer than 20-30 minutes and shows one of the three criteria we've just said, so this is a STEMI, and these patients should be referred for emergent coronary angiography and primary percutaneous coronary intervention. Once we've made the diagnosis of STEMI, in STEMI patients, it is also important to define the acute myocardial infarction culprit vessel simply by looking at ECG, and this is possible. And there are a few rules to follow. So in anterior ST elevation MI, look at the ST segment elevation in V1, V2, and V3. If the ST segment elevation in V1 is more than 2.5 mm, or if there is de novo right bundle branch block with Q wave, or both, well, the lesion is at ostial proximal left anterior descending artery, proximal to the first septal. If there is ST segment depression, so reciprocal depression, more than 1 mm in leads 2 and 3 and AVF, well, the lesion is at proximal left anterior descending artery, basically proximal to the first diagonal. If the ST segment depression, which is a reciprocal depression in inferior leads, is less or equal than 1 mm, or if there is ST segment elevation in leads 2, 3, and AVF, well, the level of the coronary lesion is at distal left anterior descending artery. Move towards the inferior STEMI. In inferior STEMI, always perform posterior and right precordial leads, while in lateral STEMI, always perform posterior leads. And how do we know the culprit lesion in inferior STEMI? Well, in inferior STEMI, if the ST segment elevation in lead 3 is greater than ST elevation in lead 2, and ST segment depression in lead 1 and AVL or both, which is the reciprocal depression area, is greater than 1 mm, well, the lesion is at the right coronary artery. And in this case, if there is ST segment elevation in V1, V4 right precordial lead or both, well, the occlusion is at proximal right coronary artery with right ventricular infarction. Conversely, in inferior STEMI, if ST segment elevation in lead 3 is not greater than ST segment elevation lead 2, and ST segment depression in lead 1 AVL or both, which is the reciprocal depression area, is less than 1 mm, well, it is probably the left circumflex artery. And in this case, always look at ST segment in left precordial leads. And if there is ST segment elevation in lead 1, AVL, V5 and V6, and ST segment depression in V1 and V2 and V3, well, the culprit lesion is going to be the left circumflex coronary artery. Finally, do not forget that if a patient comes with acute chest pain and ECG shows hyperacute T wave, that is the amplitude of the T wave greater than 2/3 of the corresponding R wave, then this is again acute myocardial ischemia. And usually T waves are tall, symmetrical, broad-based and not pointed in the leads involved by the AMI. Another rule is that we should never forget all the situations that can mask acute myocardial infarction, such as left bundle branch block, ventricular preexcitation, ventricular pacing, and ventricular tachycardia. Notably, the ECG patterns most frequently responsible for human errors in ACS are exactly those, are those ones: left ventricular hypertrophy, left bundle branch block, right bundle branch block, and pacemaker. And in all these situations, if there is a clinical suspicion of acute myocardial ischemia, still monitor the patient, repeat several ECG, and ask for troponin and echocardiogram. However, there is a quick rule to follow in these cases. In left ventricular hypertrophy and bundle branch block, ST segment is usually discordant from the major deflection of the QRS complex. In other words, positive QRS complex ST segment depression, negative QRS complex ST segment elevation. This is the rule, the normal situation. On the other hand, in the setting of acute ischemia and left bundle branch block or left ventricular hypertrophy, this not happens. And if we find an ST segment elevation more or equal than 1 mm in a lead with an upward QRS complex. So as this S segment elevation concordant to the QRS complex, then think on a QDMI. If there is ST segment depression more or equal than 1 millimeter in leads V1, V2, or V3 concordant ST segment depression, again think on a QDMI. Or if there is ST segment elevation more or equal than 5 millimeters in a lead with a downward QRS complex, so discordant ST segment deviation but a great deflection, then again think on a QDMI. So this is what happens in a QDMI in ST elevation acute McCarran infarction. But if a patient does not have a STEMI, then she or he might have a non-ST elevation SCS. And typically these patients present with prolonged chest pain more than 20 minutes relieved by nitroglycerin at rest, or they present with new onset prolonged chest pain at rest, or with accelerated chest pain within 48 hours. In this case, if ACS patients have dynamic ST changes, mainly horizontal or downsloping ST segment depression on the ECG more than 0.5 millimeter, or if they have evolving T wave, so negative T wave more than 1 millimeter, well, these patients are patients with non-ST elevation SCS, but they are at advanced risk. In particular, among non-ST elevation SCS, ECG is critical and can identify those patients at very high risk who should be referred for immediate invasive approach less than 2 hours within presentation. Indeed, if ECG shows ST segment depression more or equal than 1 millimeter in 6 leads, especially if more than 8 leads, plus ST segment elevation in AVR and or V1, well, the patient is classified at very high risk. And why is that? Because if we find such an ECG pattern, this means that the angiographic pattern will be a left main or left main equivalent or severe and proximal 3-vessel disease. Another important point is to distinguish between T-wave inversion more than 1 mm due to myocardial ischemia or left ventricular hypertrophy with strain. In left ventricular hypertrophy with strain, we usually see voltage criteria for left ventricular hypertrophy, often with left atrial enlargement, and T-wave inversion is asymmetrical with the ascending limb of the T-wave steep and with the overshoot of the terminal positivity of the T-wave over the baseline. On the other hand, in myocardial ischemia, voltage criteria for left ventricular hypertrophy are usually not present. T waves are usually symmetrical with the ascending limb of the T wave less steep, and usually T wave do not overshoot the baseline. Finally, another rule is that the T wave inversion in V6 is less pronounced in myocardial ischemia as compared to V3, while in left ventricular hypertrophy, T wave inversion in V6 may be pronounced and even more pronounced than the T wave inversion in V3. Last two things when we talk about T wave inversion. If we see T wave inversion in anteroseptal leads V1, V2, and V3, and the clinical picture does not really convince us for ACS, always think of pulmonary embolism and look for simultaneous T wave inversion in inferior and anteroseptal leads, right axis deviation, right bundle branch block, and the S1, Q3, T3 pattern. Indeed, these features strongly suggest acute pulmonary embolism just by simply looking at the ECG. Finally, last thing, T-wave alterations, specifically biphasic T-wave, may be associated with myocardial ischemia or hypokalemia. And how do we distinguish them? In myocardial ischemia, T-waves go up and then down. In hypokalemia, T waves go down and then up and are often associated with log QT correct interval. Last but not least, do not forget that in up to 8 to 10% of the patients with an acute coronary syndrome, ECG may be normal, and in up to 30% of them, ECG may show no specific ST T wave alterations. Therefore, always pay the correct attention to any patient presenting with acute chest pain or chest pain equivalent, and if we are in doubt, closely monitor the patient, repeat ECG several times, wait for high sensitivity troponin, and ask for transthoracic echo or even a thoracic CT scan. So thanks for listening to this podcast on admission pathways for acute coronary syndrome patients. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Clinical View Podcasts, brought to you by GE Healthcare. Expand your view at clinicalview.gehealthcare.com.